You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
You're listening to Muses and Stuff. This is the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves.
They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted, and they made no apologies.
We are your hosts, Shanti and Lynx.
Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Hit our record button, and then we do third backup here, which is...
Because we're real pros.
Because we're real pros. And
no wonder you guys were nominated. Well, we went for sure with the third backup.
Well, yeah, we were going to have three lines of defense, and we were just reading, going over Denise Donlan's book again, and she was saying how she was doing an interview with Billy Joel, and he was opening up so much, nothing was recorded. She said she was devastated.
Right. We just have nightmares of that now. So,
we do this.
Yeah, no. It's good, yeah. Redundancy is a good thing, right?
I have nightmares of Billy Joel, too, actually.
Especially if he opens up.
All right.
So are you guys good? You're good to go?
I'm happy.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're good? Are you recording?
We're good.
Okay. So we're sitting here with Brad and Dave from Dave or David?
Dave.
I like Dave, yeah.
Okay. Nobody calls me David except for my mom occasionally.
Okay. So we're here with Brad and Dave from 5440. First of all, we want to congratulate you. You were just inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. That's so exciting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well deserved.
Yes, exactly. Do you want to start?
Yeah, we have a podcast called Muses and Stuff. And we were just wanting to know, have you ever been on a podcast? Have you ever been guests on a podcast before?
Never been on a podcast, as far as I know.
Yay. So this is,
yes, right?
This is our deflowering right now.
Yes!
But I'm an active podcast listener, mm-hmm. and I like the form, I like the medium a lot, so.
Any podcasts in particular you like?
I like Shields and Brooks, or two political guys that talk on TV on Friday nights, and then I like what else do I like? I like the Fried Zakaria one from CNN, GPS. Yeah, those are probably my two favorites. I have other ones.
So U.S. politics.
Basically. A lot of U.S. politics. Yeah, I could get it. That's all it is. There's some science ones in there as well, and Naked Scientists, and then I got the Malcolm Gladwell revisionist history. So. Kind of, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is, but I am pretty honored to, like, sitting here with a band who's been doing this for so long now, yeah. to be able to give you a first-time experience is...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I'm very excited about.
I will start listening to your podcast now.
Thank you so much.
Just to hear Dave's voice, not just your two voices.
I want to know about your muses.
Yeah.
respond to one song?
Lynx is my muse. A lot of my girlfriends are my muses. A lot of women in who are doing great things, making positive changes, working in the music industry or anything that has to do with social justice and so Denise Donlin, humanitarian work. So just the connection between the music, the message, the magic, and then talking to the people who make it.
Right.
Yeah, and we try to focus on women, but we also focus on male muses as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, everyone gets their time in.
Yeah, and then we have also been talking about the G word, groupies.
Oh yeah.
So how it started back in the 60s, what happened in the 70s and 80s, and kind of reclaiming the term again.
Yeah.
Because it turned into something that became, don't talk about it, or very, ew, she's a groupie. So just taking that language back.
Yeah.
For us, groupie is just anyone who wants a little more intimate an experience with the band, someone who wants an autograph at the end of the show or a photo, someone who, a fan is just someone who enjoys the music and is fine being separate from it. A groupie is someone who just wants that little extra connection with whoever makes the music that touches them most.
Yep, that sounds completely fair to me.
I never really understood the term myself.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
It got muddled pretty badly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always had.
And it was once the positive, too, which is so interesting, like how it shifted so quickly.
Well, it was explored in the Almost Famous, right? And they did it justice there, I thought.
It's interesting, even in that film, though, like, they don't want to be called groupies. They're called band-aids.
Yeah.
But it's clear that, like, they are groupies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, did you want to ask the first question?
About listening to podcasts?
Yeah, and like, what do you guys listen to when you're touring?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we were kind of saying, so you listen to podcasts, but when you're touring, like, on the road, what have you been listening to lately? And are you doing iTunes? Are you Apple Music? Are you radio? Are you listening to the radio?
It varies. A lot of times when we're driving from A to B, what do we listen to? Quirks and Quarks?
Yeah, on Saturdays.
Sirius Satellite Radio?
That's
sometimes we have that, but we're talking CBC
a lot of
CBC,
and it kind of connects the country, right? So we spend most of our time in Canada, and you actually get it outside Canada quite easily. We all have the app and that kind of stuff, so, and that's where we get me personally, where almost a lot of music is filtered through that too, or NPR in the United States, where, so that's
okay.
And then also Neil is a big fan of Apple Music and their playlists. So he's before show, a lot of time in the dressing room, we have the stereo going, and he's pulled up a playlist that's psychedelic 60s.
Yeah.
That's a big one. We're, you know, a lot of the time we're going back in order to discover new things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great things about these, about streaming and these playlists is you're getting to discover for the first time music from the past.
Yes. It's
very inspirational.
And speaking of new technologies, you've been touring for 30 years now. How has technology changed the way you interact with your fans? Are you social media people?
We are. I mean, we are. We have an Instagram account and Twitter and Facebook. There's a band Facebook, and also all four of us are on Facebook. But we're probably not as active as a band of 20-year-olds who've grown up with the format.
Yeah.
I think that we're probably a little skeptical of it because the bands that we grew up listening to was mysterious.
Yeah.
Like, what did Pink Floyd look like? Or what did Led Zeppelin do when they're not on stage? Mm-hmm. Like, you heard rumors.
You can read Pamela DeBar's book, I'm with the Band, Confessions of a Groupie, to find out all the answers to that.
And then you'll know what they looked like and what they were doing in between shows. So, you know, growing up, discovering music in the 70s and the 80s, I mean, you basically had a gatefold album to find out about the band and maybe a couple of fan magazines.
Yeah. You bought Rolling Stone or Cream, you know.
You know, nobody was taking photos of their lunch for everybody to see.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little skeptical. Like, do I need to know what Dan Magan had for lunch? I don't know. I don't is it important to me?
It is interesting to think of like what Mick Jagger or Jimmy Page would have been like, tweeting about back then.
I remember laying on my bed like as a 12-year-old for whatever band I was into at the time and just wondering, what are they doing right now? Mm-hmm. And now a 12-year-old can go...
Now they know.
Oh, I know now.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then that's it.
Yeah,
instead
Nick Jonas is taking photos of himself. That's what he's doing right now. So
yeah,
it definitely does take some of the magic away.
And we're also trying to find our sweet spot with bands and social media. How much do we connect or contact before? How much do we tweet? How much do we? And then how much of it is just naturally after show walking up and saying, "Hey, we're big fans," and doing it that way. So some bands seem to really enjoy the interaction before. Some. If you tweet at them, we'll retweet or see you there, and some won't even do anything. So we're just trying to figure out, too, where how much we want to go on that.
Yeah. Us, too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
You prefer the personal connection of meeting your fans in person and seeing them at shows.
Speaking of fans, when I heard that you were playing the festival and that we might have the chance to interview you, I thought, my roommate actually got up on stage with you in Peterborough during the summer one time at the end of your set. It was the last song and you had invited people to come up on stage and dance with you. Mm-hmm. And she said that it was one of the most fun experiences that she's ever had at a show. And it's so nice that you get to provide that for people. Not only a great show, but then that little personal experience as well. I'd like to flip the switch a little bit and ask you if you've had any memorable moments from a fan.
From a fan's perspective.
From...
Or any interesting moments that you remember, like a fun fan moment, something crazy that's happened, or something really sweet.
Well, when you've been playing a long time, you get, and you're lucky, eventually you get to play with a hero. Eventually you end up playing on a bill or opening up for... a band that you grew up with and has been highly influential. And in our case, we had an experience about 10 years ago when we got to open up for the Rolling Stones. And not only did we get to open the show, but we got to meet them, hang out a bit. And we actually went out drinking one night with Ron Wood and got a little window into his daily existence. I wonder what he's doing right now. I'll tell you what he's doing right now. He's drinking vodka.
Maybe ordering a salad, too.
You know, it's...
So sometimes you're the fan.
Yeah. Sometimes you're the fan. I mean, a lot of times you're working with your peers, mm-hmm. right? Particularly Canadian bands, we've met them all over the years, and we're friends, and can be partners in crime sometimes. And sometimes it's just like, hey, how's it going? As you pass in the hall, but every once in a while, you have one of these moments where it's like, am I really doing shots with a member of the Rolling Stones right now? I am. This is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That's so great.
And it's hard to not. You know, you kind of have to pinch yourself at that point. So, yeah, I guess you kind of... I guess I'm a bit of a groupie.
Yeah.
Thank you
for
saying that.
Well, and the little sidebar to that is that, you know, that morning I got up. We're staying at the Palliser Hotel in Calgary, and I make my way to my favorite breakfast spot. And Neil and I have breakfast. And I order a, you know, fairly good-sized breakfast, and I start poking at my food, and I realize I can't eat. Which doesn't happen to me very often. I was nervous. You know, I was like, it's like, you know, it was quite an eventful day. So that's very much we were fans.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So I have a quote here from Neil. He said, "Songs are stories, and hit songs are classic stories." I was wondering if you could tell us the story behind one of your classic hits.
Oh yeah, I do. I know a few of them. This one here is One Gun. Mm-hmm. And Neil, just I said the other day that this song pretty much kind of wrote itself. So he was in a very intense relationship with this woman. I don't know if I should give away the ending. I'm going to do it. Who he eventually married and is still married to now. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And they've separated just while she went down to South America to do some social work, social justice kind of people. She was documenting people's stories.
We need to look her up then.
Yes. Yeah, well, we should probably get her here. Janine, she's here. She's actually
fantastic.
With us. Yeah. So, and so she did all that. And so that is what that song is all about. So it's the personal. And then it's gets into sort of what, why she's not there, right? So it's, and it's very, very obvious and very literal when you know the story.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I have one last question, and then I think Lynx has one last question, if that's okay. Your last album was all unplugged versions of unplugged classics, and you also change up the arrangements in your live shows. Correct?
Yeah.
How does the reinvention, or does the reinvention of your old songs shift your connection to the song?
Yeah. You want to talk about that?
I mean... It was a bit of a fluke. What it really came out of was the fact that we, a lot of these songs that we play nightly are 20, 25, 30 years old. And they have to be played every night. Like, the fans come, they want to hear their favorite songs. And you want to stay in business, you got to give the people what you want, what they want. But, what you want and what they want. There had been people were starting to go in the band, and I write the set lists. I determine what we're going to play every night.
Nice.
And I was getting a little bit of, oh, do we have to play that song?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really sick of that song. Well, it's a hit. It's like a top five hit. People go crazy when you play it. Oh, I'm so bored of it. And I had an idea with a certain song called Crossing a Canyon, which was a hit for the band in 95, 94?
5, 96?
Good year.
So I was listening to the song, which is a very sort of pop rock major key song, and I listened to the words, and the words were really dark, and I hadn't really noticed before. I was very interested by the dichotomy between the darkness of the words and the buoyancy of the chords and the melody. And I said to Neil, like, what is that song about? And he said, that song's about my dad dying. I'm like, wow, like, it's such a happy sounding song with these dark lyrics. And he goes, it's kind of strange that way. And I took it away, and I just took the melody and the lyric and changed the chords to, in my mind, support the message. And we went to a rehearsal one day, and I said, Neil, I have an idea for this song. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. So I just want you to sing this song, and I'm going to play different chords over it. You just sing exactly the same melody here as your first note. And he played it, and we went all the way through it, and he went, wow, that's so weird. And he, you know, after playing through it a few times, he really fell in love with it.
Nice.
And Janine, who was just mentioned, his wife, like, she heard it, and she was, like, totally blown away. And that gave us the gem of just the spark of the idea that maybe we could do that with some other of the singles from the band's catalog. And what it does is it allows us to do a different kind of show where we can go into a smaller theater and do a more intimate, personal experience for the fans, where Neil is telling stories about the songs or personal anecdotes about the history of the band. And then we can do reimagined versions of the songs that maybe shine a light on the lyrics in a little bit different way. And then the next week we can go out and rock out and do the songs as people know them on the records.
Perfect.
And yeah, the last question, you have an album, Keep On Walking, coming out?
Yeah, we have an album in the can. It took us several years to make.
That's a long one, yeah.
It was a very, very long gestation period. But we've birthed it now. It's mastered. It's ready to go. And it's going to be coming out on El Macombo Records.
Nice.
It's just announced today. Sometime probably when?
June, they say.
June!
Yeah.
And you tour July, right?
We've got a lot of shows in July.
Shows in July.
Then we'll see you at some.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because that's what a good groupie does.
Shows
she follows her favorite bands. Or they show up.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you so much, Brad. And
thank
Dave.
You.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Nice to meet you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, great to meet you.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.